member not here yet, but we'll go ahead and get started for, because I understand you all have schedules. For the record, Senator Wilikowski is here, Senator Cowdery, Senator Wilkin, and myself, Senator Kukesh, chair of the committee. The first bill before us today will be Senate Bill 130. And if you'd like to give us your name and affiliation for the record, understand Senator Green will not be here today, which is fine. Thank you.
That's correct, Senator. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Darwin Peterson, staff to Senate President Green. Senate President Green's schedule doesn't allow her to be here this afternoon, but she wanted me to make sure that I passed on her appreciation to you, Mr. Chairman, and the committee members for scheduling this bill today. The bill before you is Senate Bill 130, an act that deals with the registration of farm vehicles. The intent of the legislation is to increase the maximum weight that a vehicle will be eligible for in order to receive farm plates from 16,000 pounds to 20,000 pounds. The need for this legislation was brought to Senator Green's attention from a constituent who lives in Palmer and owns a farm and often makes trips down to Canada with his farm vehicle in order to pick up supplies for his farm. And just to give you a little bit of history about the weight of farm vehicles, prior to 1978, the maximum weight allowed in law was 12,000 pounds. That was raised to 16,000 pounds, primarily just for the simple reason that vehicles were getting bigger and heavier. So for the same reason, Senator Green thinks it's justified at this point to raise that weight from 16,000 pounds to 20,000 pounds, because cargo vans and a lot of the heavy-duty pickups that are used on farms today and are qualified to be used on the highway are just getting heavier and bigger. And a lot of the farmers in Alaska are finding that the 16,000-pound restriction is just not big enough for the vehicles that are on the road. There are a couple of farmers in the state, Steve Vantroba and Bill Ward, that should be online today that can explain in more detail, if the committee desires, about the need for this legislation. That concludes my testimony. I'm happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Do we have questions from committee members on this particular bill? Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. How many vehicles are we talking about here? Do we know?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, currently there's 466 vehicles that are registered as farm vehicles with expiration dates of 2007, 2008, or 2009, according to the DMV.
And if I could, Mr. Chair, what is the rationale for having the 16,000-pound restriction? Do you know? Or for having any restriction, for that matter?
The reason is because true commercial vehicles, such as semis, should not be eligible for farm plates because they're used for commercial purposes. But a farmer in Palmer, say, that goes up to Delta Junction and picks up hay in a cargo van and returns to his farm to use that hay, is not, there's no need to charge them commercial vehicle rates to use that, because they're using it solely for the purpose of their farm.
Is there any concern about, I'm gathering that the reason that we have these weight limits is, probably a couple reasons, but one of the reasons is for the impact that these have on the roads. Is there any concern that we need to have, or are you aware of any concerns from Department of Transportation or any of the road, any of the groups that deal with roads pertaining to the impact that this additional weight might have on the roads?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, there's definitely an argument for the fact that larger vehicles do more, do more damage to the roads or tear up the roads more than smaller vehicles. But I have spoke with the Department of Transportation about this legislation. They don't see any problem with this weight limit as far as the highways are concerned. The number of vehicles we're talking about is very negligible.
Okay. Just one last question, Mr. Chair, if I might. The 20,000 pounds, what size truck are we talking about? Can you give me some kind of something that I can pin that to in my mind?
Certainly. Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, it's larger than a Dodge Ram pickup truck. It could be a cargo van or a medium-sized vehicle. It's not, pickup trucks are considered to be light vehicles. Medium vehicles are cargo vans, buses, wreckers, those kind of sizes of vehicles. And then the heavy vehicles, of course, the semis and the commercial vehicles.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Questions? The other committee members have questions? Could you explain to me the registration plate part of this legislation?
It's a...
I noticed we got a... we got a...
yeah.
Document. Do you want to speak to this document, or?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. It's a specialized plate, same way that in statute in 2810-181, there's a list of specialized plates for veterans, for legislators, for children. There's a whole host of plates, and farm plates is one of them that qualifies for a special plate. Dwayne Bannock, the director of DMV, is online and could probably speak in more detail about this, but my understanding is if the special farm plates run out, then they just use standard plates, but there's a cheaper registration for them.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Yeah, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you just tell me if there's other states that have a similar type program as this, where you've got, where farming is much more of a statewide revenue, or much more active farmers and ranchers?
Certainly, through the chair, Senator Olson. In my research on this bill, it appears that almost every state does.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Other questions? Yes, Senator Wilkowski.
Follow up on that question. You're saying that other states typically have the 20,000 pound weight?
Oh, no, not the weight limit. Sorry, through the chair, I was referring to just the use of special farm vehicles, or a special registration in statute for farm vehicles and the use of farm plates. The actual weight limit, through the chair, I apologize. I didn't research what each state has set as a maximum for the weights in those states, but there's a wide range. You know, some states, I'm sure, probably allow much larger vehicles to be used for farm vehicles. States like Nebraska that have a lot of farms and ranches, and that's part of their economy.
Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Wilkin.
Thank you. I guess I don't see in the bill about where the license plate is. Is there a CS we don't have? Is this license plate attached to Senate Bill 130?
It's this last sentence. You should registration plate. It was distinct. It's designed right at the bottom. That's the only thing that we have.
Okay. Yeah, if I may, Mr. Chair, Senator Wilkin, the legislation doesn't change the way that standard or that special farm plates are issued at all. It just increases the weight. And if I believe in your packet there's some regulation information from the Division of Motor Vehicles that just explains what a vehicle or which vehicles can qualify for farm plates, and this legislation is not trying to change that process at all. It's just increasing the weight.
Then why do we have this piece of paper with this license plate on it?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkin, I have I've never seen that before. I think probably that came to the committee from DMV just to show you what a special farm plate looks like. It's very similar to the special plate that legislators receive, or
so this is existing today.
Yes.
This doesn't propose putting in new license plates. Oh, okay.
No.
Thank you.
Other questions from the committee? If not, online we have three individuals. Larry, is it Divelbliss from Agriculture? Are you online, sir?
Yes, I am.
you want to testify. It shows America that you do. Would you like to make some comments?
I would, and it's very timely. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senators. The plate that was being discussed, I assume, is the one that has the Alaska grown.
Yes, that is the one.
Emblem on it, and ABC 123. That was placed in my hands by a farmer last weekend up in Fairbanks, and I'm only passing that on. It doesn't come with a recommendation from our department, but it is a novel idea. I can testify that at least here in Palmer, there have not been farm plates issued when you get a farm plate license for a couple of years. And if this would add a fiscal burden to this legislation, I don't think a new dedicated farm plate is probably a good idea. I do think the legislation is good, though, because I have personally found it very difficult to get an insulated delivery truck with a van box on it and a self-unloading gate on the back that will fit the 16,000-pound category. I think it's very appropriate to raise that to 20,000 pounds. And that's all I really had to contribute. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the presenter? Thank you very much for your presentation today. We'll go to Matt Sue, and we have Stephen Van Troba.
Yes.
Yeah, for the record, would you just state your name and your affiliation, please?
Steve Van Troba, and I'm a farmer, horse farmer, rancher in Palmer.
Okay. Would you like to make some comments on the proposed legislation?
Yes. I want to thank you, Chairman, and other senators for taking your time to do this. My main concern was when I traveled to Alberta to get hay. What they've been telling me is how come I didn't have farm plates on my vehicle. And if I did have farm plates, I wouldn't have to pay the trip permits and the fuel permits, which costs, you know, approximately around $600 a trip. And that's my main thing. It's not necessary for the state, because I have commercial plates on my truck. It's not my intentions to try to cheat the state out of, you know, any more licensing fee. It's just for the trip permits for me in Alberta.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for that? Yes, go ahead, Senator Wilkowski has a question for you.
So are you opposing this bill, sir?
No, I'm for the bill to raise the weight limit from 16 to 20,000.
Okay, I'm sorry, I misunderstood. And what you're saying then is if this bill doesn't pass, then you could be required to pay additional fees when you go travel?
Yes, that's what's happening currently.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
Questions? If not, thank you for your presentation today. We'll go next to Dwayne Bannock, I see, is on for DMV. Would you like to make some comments, Dwayne?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, or good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I'm Dwayne Bannock with the Department of Administration today representing the Division of Motor Vehicles. Appreciate the opportunity to comment on this. I would just give you a tiny bit of background that we were attempting to do some research as to why the 16,000-pound number was there. Our research shows us that in the 70s it was changed from 12,000 pounds to 16,000 pounds, yet there's not any historical reason for why that was done. And we've also researched in the context to the federal commercial driver's licensing rules, and there does not appear to be a weight restriction there, but rather that privilege is given to the state to make that determination by statute. As such, we will cheerfully we will cheerfully support this if the committee and the legislature feels that it's in the best public interest. As such, we've also submitted a zero fiscal note. Thank you, sir.
Questions? Committee members? Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Bannock. Is there a punishment now? I mean, what if someone is driving around with a vehicle has a gross weight of 20,000 pounds? Do they have to get additional permits, or is there I'm imagining there's some sort of fine?
Through the chair, Senator, if the person had a vehicle that was greater than 16,000 pounds and was displaying that plate, then one of two different things would have had to have happened. One of three different things. Had to have been a DMV error to issue it. We would have had to have been given bad information as to the weight of the vehicle. Or thirdly, there was a fraudulent use of that plate on that vehicle. Clearly, if the DMV makes a mistake, then I don't know that the customer should be held responsible for that. If a customer told us that the truck weighed 15,000 pounds, but it really weighed 20,000 pounds, I think those two latter scenarios would make a case for a violation of this chapter for wrongful vehicle registration.
Okay, thank you. Senator Cowdery?
Yes, Dwayne. Say... you give out the DMV or the Department of Transportation gives out overweight permits, right?
Senator Cowdery, DOT, Department of Transportation, does overweight permits,
yeah.
Not us.
I see. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? No, thank you for your testimony today.
Thank you, sir.
We'll go to Delta Junction, where we have three people online. I'll go to Mr. Ward first. Bill Ward.
Yes, this is Bill Ward. I'm the owner of a livestock and hay farm in Delta Junction, and we are currently using farm license vehicles in our operation for the transport of materials to our farm, as well as the delivery of our products throughout the state. I think it is appropriate to raise the weight on these licensed vehicles, and there's a couple reasons here that I'd like to relate to. One is farm license vehicles are governed under DOT rules differently than they govern commercial vehicles. And then the Alaska weight measure DOT follows those statutes under the U.S. DOT. And some of those statutes that affect farm licensing a little different than standard commercial vehicles includes the hours of service regulations, which is log books as far as how far you can drive with without having to log a trip. There's also some difference in farm licensing with respect to the commercial driver's license requirements. You're allowed under a farm application to drive a different radius without the license on. Mainly it's just like for farm to field type scenarios. There's also, the best of my understanding, a little difference in the vehicle inspection rule. So it is appropriate for the state to maintain a farm licensing program and to allow these vehicles to get out of the program so that both the state and the federal can govern the rules correctly. Now, currently, we are able to operate within statute, but we have to use an older equipment. In fact, our on the road truck right now is a 13-year-old truck. And we need a newer truck. We need to update it. But right now, in this day, it's almost impossible to find the newer trucks that meet these weight standards because of the added safety equipment and the modern components they put on these newer and heavier trucks. So as a result, you know, our operation, we're forced to keep our old truck packs together. And for us, that's pretty expensive to keep it in compliance with the safety inspections, and also it results in us getting faced with greater oversight by the Vehicle Enforcement Division just because they look at old trucks more intently. You know, all states do, that I've traveled through, do have farm plating, and they actually judge by seeing the farm designation on the plate is how they do their permitting structure. And Canada does have specific standards for farm licensing when we travel in there. It does give us the savings and permits fees and does make the compliance with their non-resident trucking requirements a little different. The requirements, as you see in the standards there, are pretty specific on what it takes to get a farm licensed vehicle. They do restrict it to the farm operating and exclude any commercial for hire application. And I know the Canadians review that very carefully whenever I travel through to make sure that I am just hauling my own goods, not doing any commercial work. And I assume our weights and measures do that as well. You know, the other thing that I have noticed that when I've come in through Canada, and we usually make about a trip a year down there, when I come in through Canada, that it's once we come in with our private goods on our truck that has farm plating on it, it does help with our paperwork going through the U.S. Customs to show it documented that it is a private carrier carrying private goods. So for those reasons, I think it is appropriate and timely that these standards are raised so that we can, you know, not only stay in compliance, but we can also update our equipment to get a little more, you know, safe and modern equipment and be able to staying compliance with the U.S. DOT requirements. And that would be my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the presenter, Mr. Ward? Seeing none, thank you very much for your presentation today. I'll go to Adam Griswold from Delta Junction. Are you online, sir?
Yeah. My name's Adam Griswold, and my family runs a farm here in Delta Junction. And like Bill Ward said, it's hard to find a new truck that meets the 16,000 pounds that were allowed with the farm plate, so I'm in favor of the bill passing, so that way we can get newer equipment that's safer for the road.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Griswold? Seeing none, we're going to go to Nate Griswold then at Delta Junction.
Well, this is Nate Griswold here, and pretty much, you know, everything as far as what Bill said is correct. I mean, we do have to update our stuff. I mean, the parts are expensive. It's just like everybody says, it's hard to find equipment to actually replace our old stuff because we can't do anything about it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Griswold from the committee? Seeing none, thank you very much. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify? Seeing none, we're going to close public testimony. It's my intention to move the bill if Mr. Senator Cowdery?
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion to move committee bills 130.
Right.
Or Senate Bill 130 forward to finance, the next committee referral with the accompanying fiscal note, zero fiscal note. And ask for unanimous consent.
Unanimous consent has been requested. Any objection? Seeing none, then that bill will be moved out of committee to the next committee referral. We'll take a 1 minute break to sign our bill packet. Senate Bill 68, and we do have a CS, and we'd like to work off a CS, Senator Cowdery.
Yeah, I'd move that we operate or accept the committee substitute for Senate Bill 68, Labor and Commerce, and use that as our working document.
Yeah, it's the N version.
N version?
Yes.
I got / O.
Yeah, we have the N version. It's probably right there next to you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay, is there an objection to the new CS? If not, we are on the Senate Bill 68/N, and I'd like to ask the sponsor to come forward to present the bill if they would, if you would, Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Hollis French. I represent West Anchorage, the communities of Turnagain and Spinard in the State Senate. With me is my staffer, Allison Biostock. The Senate Bill 68 is essentially designed to make it easier for state law enforcement officials and Department of Motor Vehicle officials to verify whether an insurance policy is in effect on the vehicles that are operating on Alaska's highways. The Insurance Research Council, a national group, estimates that about 14% of Alaskan drivers are uninsured. And yet when you look at crash data, when you look at data from traffic accidents in the state, we'll find that about 28% of the crashes involve an uninsured driver. So it's more than twice as likely that a driver doesn't have an insurance policy as compared to the population at large. The according to the Division of Insurance, about 6% of your full coverage policy covers the cost of these uninsured drivers. For liability policies, it's about 14% of your bill goes to cover the cost of these individuals who won't carry insurance. And currently, there's no method for enforcing the mandatory insurance law. The bill is written to provide what's known as an event-based system, verification system for insurance, meaning that the state can verify that you have mandatory insurance during points of contact. Point of contact is when you go to DMV to renew your registration. Point of contact is when you're pulled over by a police officer for a traffic stop, and so forth. The included in the packet is a report from an industry group called the IICMVA. That's the Insurance Industry Committee on Motor Vehicle Administration. And the report concludes that that group supports an event-based online verification system. Online verification methods have garnered industry support because they are compatible with existing industry computer programs. Today you will hear from a gentleman named Mr. Charles Pecchio. Mr. Pecchio is from a company called Verisol. Verisol is a vendor of these event-based online insurance verification systems. Currently, four other states, Florida, Texas, Wyoming, and Oklahoma, have adopted Verisol as their online insurance verification system. Finally, the bill also has a section that allows municipalities to make failure to have mandatory motor vehicle insurance in place an impoundable offense, to give some teeth to the law to let the officers impound a car when they deem it necessary to get it off the road since it doesn't have an insurance policy. I'll just point out that the cost is about $100 a year to $120 a year to Alaska consumers to cover the cost of uninsured motorists. That's, behind the idea is the idea that, behind the bill is the idea that it'd be good to get that cost down the more we drive. You know, if you had no uninsured vehicles on the road, the cost to a consumer would be $0 to cover against the eventuality of being hit by an uninsured motorist. And I'll just point out that the backslash N that you've got in front of you is the result of many, many hours of work that we have put in with industry representatives and their lobbyists to try to alleviate the concerns that the industry had with respect to the earlier versions of the bill. We've adopted the vast majority of the suggestions they've made. I think that we've reduced or increased their comfort level with the bill. And I'd be remiss if I didn't point out that my staff are here. Ms. Biostock has spent the lion's share of those hours in phone calls with the industry lobbyists, with the industry groups behind them, with the drafters, right up until the moment of the meeting, trying to work with every single concern they brought us in as cooperative a manner as possible so that we reach a bill that works for both sides, works for the industry, which is going to be obligated to provide the information, and works for the state, which is going to be hoping to enforce this bill should it become law. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer questions from you or the members of the committee.
Senator Cowdery has a question for you.
Now, you're saying when you go get your license, your DMV, you got to have they check your insurance if you have insurance on it. Is that right?
Right now, when you go and register a car, they ask you, do you have insurance?
Yeah, it's an honor system.
It's an honor system.
But now this one will make it mandatory. Is that right? That show a certificate of insurance or something?
It would either do that, or if we were to adopt the online system, the DMV person could turn to their computer, type in a few keystrokes, and check and see yes or no, is it in effect right at this moment? Because if I can just continue, Senator Cowdery, through the chair, sometimes folks will go and get an insurance policy, get the nifty little card that they shows that they have enough policy, and then they can cancel the insurance the next day, keep the card for proof of insurance for as long as they like. So just the card itself isn't real proof that there's still a policy in effect.
Senator Follow up.
I notice, do you exempt, or is your intention, or would you accept a friendly amendment to exempt commercial?
Commercial vehicles?
Yes.
Absolutely, yes. Thank you, Senator Cowdery. Through the chair, the most states exempt commercial vehicles from their online verification system type bills because of the relatively little risk there is that a commercial vehicle would be operating without an insurance policy in effect. It's just almost unheard of. And
could you point out where you'd an amendment or would fit in this?
I'd leave that to the drafter, or maybe Ms. Biostock has some thoughts about that. But my sense is it would probably go somewhere in Section 5. That's kind of the heart
of the
bill.
I'd like to propose an amendment that basically says that it exempts all commercial vehicles from this bill.
I'd object.
We have a motion for an objection Want to speak to your objection?
No, I don't think we ought to do it.
Okay.
What's good for the automobile operator is good for the commercial operator.
Okay.
They need to go through the same hoops that the citizens do.
I would just have a question. I guess I have similar concerns over that. I'm just curious why you had no objection to that. I mean, why? What is the rationale behind other states not allowing commercial vehicles to opt out? It seems to me like we would want to cover those particularly.
We contacted the Division of Motor Vehicles ahead of this hearing with this concern, and it was our word back from them that it wasn't a worry of theirs. And I think it goes back to the you know, commercial realities that commercial vehicles carry insurance. You just don't get on the road with a commercial vehicle without an insurance policy.
If I could just follow up, but is there some sort of burden that I'm missing here for commercial vehicles? I mean, why should we treat commercial vehicles differently? Other than is there a burden to them in doing this?
Probably the best answer that you're going to get on that topic would come from the DMV, and so I would defer to their yeah. policy call.
Are they on the line?
Or yes, they are. I have them online. Yeah. Dwayne is online.
Would this be the appropriate time, Mr. Chair, to ask that question of DMV?
If there's no objection, we will go right to Dwayne Bannock, DMV. Would you identify yourself and for the record?
Yes, sir. Again, I'm Dwayne Bannock with the Division of Motor Vehicles. I believe that question came from Senator Wilkowski.
Yes, sir.
Through the chair, Senator, a very good question. If the question, as I heard it, why would we support exempting commercial vehicles from this. I think that there's two things. We're not exempting them from the insurance requirement. That's important. We're exempting them from the requirement that would fit under this electronic access. And I would just simply submit a couple of factors. Number one, many commercially owned vehicles in Alaska are self-insured, and thus they're not going to be reporting into this system that's been proposed. Again, that doesn't mean that they don't have insurance. It simply means that under this model, we would not have that. We wouldn't have the availability of that. Second point that I would very respectfully make, in the commercial category, there's roughly 50,000 vehicles. That's a stretch, perhaps, vehicles that are registered commercially. And I'll come back to that phrase in just a minute. It's 50,000 out of nearly 900,000 pieces of vehicle registrations that we have. So clearly, the lion's share are not registered commercially. And then if I just may, I would prefer to use the language vehicles registered commercially as opposed to a commercial vehicle. For instance, a commercial vehicle has both a statutory and a federal regulatory definition, i.e. the semi-truck or something. Yet, what I think that we can gain from this is a vehicle, and we'll just pick on a rental car company. A rental car company has cars like you and I drive every day, but they happen to be registered commercially, and they also happen to have the same self-insurance process. So it would be my suggestion that we replace the words commercial vehicle with vehicles registered commercially, and then just to throw in the icing on the cake, on average, rule of thumb, a vehicle that is registered commercially pays double what you and I pay for our own vehicles.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I can understand and I can rationalize in my head that the reason that we might not want to include them because it might be onerous for them because there might be self-insureds. I can understand that. Are there how many do we know accidents or injuries occur from uninsured commercial vehicles? Do we have any data on that?
Senator, I don't have the state data directly in front of me. I will share with you. I spent last weekend with the head of the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. Nationally, accidents and injuries that involve commercial motor vehicles are less than 5%. And one of the problems with that number 5%, he gave the example, if the other car crosses the lane and crashes into the commercial vehicle, didn't mean that the commercial vehicle driver was doing anything wrong, but it does put into that, it puts it into that category. So all of commercial vehicles combined in the United States of America last year accounted for 5%. And again, that number is not inclusive of just the ones that they caused. The moral of that story is our commercial drivers are doing an awesome job.
Just, I think, one last question, Mr. Banik. Could you give the committee some kind of an outline of what kind of costs, what kind of burden it would be to them if we were to include commercial vehicles in this bill? And if you have any kind of fiscal amounts or other personnel burdens that would be incurred?
Through the chair, Senator, I don't have a prepared answer for that. Forgive me. And it largely is because of the fact that these self-insurers are not necessarily readily available online.
Thank you, Senator Cowdery.
Yeah, you talk about crossing the lane and hitting the vehicle. I think that happened to my daughter. It was a moose that crossed the lane and hit her vehicle. But anyway, I'd like to know from Dwayne, if at all possible, how many drivers driving without insurance are also driving without a valid license? If they know what, do you have any statistics on that?
Senator Cowdery, through the chair, I don't have that number available. I bet we could probably do some number crunching, and I believe, as I'm guessing that you're suggesting, there's a correlation there.
I think so.
Thank you. Any more questions for Dwayne Banik? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson, sorry.
I just want to make sure that I understand what is being said here. As you look at commercial vehicle accidents, how often do they get involved in a situation where they cause an accident and the poor victim of the accident has a problem and has to go on some type of social assistance in order to pay their hospital bills as well as continue on with a lifestyle to which they are accustomed afterwards?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I don't have any data to support that or to back that up. I don't know. I'm sorry.
Does the sponsor have it, Mr. Chairman?
I don't. I can only work with the number that Mr. Bennett gave us, that nationally, less than 5% of vehicle accidents are involved in uninsured or are involved in a commercial vehicle, and we haven't gotten anywhere near the question of how many of those are uninsured.
Mm-hmm. One last question, Mr. Chairman. How does a person prove that he can self-insure his vehicle on a commercial basis? Mr. Banik?
Senator, that is addressed in statute. Forgive me, sir, I don't have it directly in front of me. It is, there is a statute in 2810 for self-insurance and the procedures for doing such.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions for Dwayne, Mr. Banik, I mean? If not, we do have an amendment before us. Did you suggest an appropriate place for it and what the language would be?
Just off the top of my head, Senator Kukesh, thank you. I would suggest something like nothing in this section, which would be the section 28-22035. Nothing in this section imposes a duty to participate in an internet-based system on vehicles that are registered commercially. That'd be the conceptual amendment, I think, that Senator Cowdery has phrased.
Okay, any more questions on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, is it your intent to move this bill today?
You know, I had intended to move it, but I'm getting a little bit confused and concerned about the amendment and the questions that are being asked today. Senator French, what's your... I'd like to get some input from you on this.
I'm at the will of the committee.
Yeah. Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that certainly a person, the people that I know that are in business, especially around the airport, have got a number of commercial vehicles that are out there, and I think it would be an encumbrance for them to go ahead and have to go ahead and comply with this, and I agree with the amendment. I myself have own flatbeds and forklifts and things like that, and so I can understand where these people are coming from and how they would want to go ahead and got enough problems already trying to stay in business without having to be under this type of umbrella that where you're trying to at least get the, from the spirit of the bill to try and go ahead and cover these uninsured vehicles. So I'd be in favor of the amendment and in favor of moving this on.
Okay. Well, I don't have any intention of not moving it. I just would like to make sure we have enough of the questions answered so that we can. Let's go back to the amendment. Go ahead.
Just for the reassurance of the committee members, Mr. Chairman, the bill does go on to finance.
Yes, I understand that, and I did see that referral.
Thank you.
Yeah. But I'd like to get the work done here if we could.
Absolutely,
really,
yes,
appreciate
Mr. Chairman.
That. So the amendment would go under Section 28.22.035, and the language would be, again, Senator French?
Nothing in this section should be construed to impose a duty to participate in an internet-based system verifying mandatory vehicle insurance for vehicles registered commercially.
Okay. And the internet-based system word.
That's the term of art that you'll see.
It's a term of art. Okay.
It's the term of art that you'll see on page 3, lines 12 and 13.
Okay, great. Okay, we have the amendment before us. It's termed a friendly amendment.
Yes.
And we do have the place for it in the document, and we do have the language. Is there a further objection?
I may deem my objection.
Okay, then we'll have a vote on the amendment.
Yes.
Yes.
Senator yes.
Senator
no. Yes. Okay, we do have that amendment out of in the process, and we still do have some individuals who would like to testify. So we're going to move into the testimony of individuals online or in the room. Charles Pecchio, you're online. Would you are you online, sir?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Would you identify yourself and state your affiliation for the record, please?
And I'm president and CEO of Verisol, which is a company that creates software for online verification insurance. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senators. As Senator French pointed out, major issue with the current approach to verifying insurance is the reliance on the card. That insurance card doesn't disappear if insurance is canceled. Also, it's easily duplicated with a computer and a printer. And so it really is not proof of insurance. And what we're talking about here in terms of an electronic system, the electronic check would actually be the proof of insurance. Many states have implemented systems that require insurance companies to transfer their entire books of business to the state on a regular basis. The insurance industry has vehemently opposed this approach, as you well know, because it's very expensive for them to create, develop the software, maintain it, and administer it, and it's also expensive for the state. Plus, the moment that the information is transferred, it's outdated. And so that's why the Insurance Industry Committee on Motor Vehicle Administration, the IICMVA, has created this online approach. The online approach really utilizes standard web services that are set up by the insurance companies to reply to real-time requests for verification of insurance. And the IICMVA has published web services specifications that everyone complies with. And as mentioned earlier, they've instituted pilot programs in Florida, Wyoming, and they're involved in the new Texas program, as is our company, Verisol. And although the web services are standardized, every jurisdiction has a different approach, has different business rules, and different requirements for insurance verification. So our company has created software that operates on the jurisdiction's computers, performs real-time online vehicle insurance verification using the standardized web services based on the IICMVA specification, but with the enhancements and the integration that's required by each jurisdiction. The accuracy is the same as picking up the phone and calling the insurance company. It doesn't require the input of additional data because it's integrated with existing systems so that when a motor vehicle administrator or law enforcement personnel wants to perform routine vehicle registration or traffic stops, you know, and actually check on the vehicle, they automatically and instantly get insurance information as well. So it doesn't change any existing approach, any existing systems. It just gets added in as part of what's already happening. So the jurisdiction gets more effective law enforcement and also gets additional revenue from fines and reinstatement fees. In some jurisdictions, the reinstatement fees are projected to be double, triple, or quadruple any costs related to implementing this. And both the insurance companies and the jurisdictions have reduced expenses for the development, the maintenance, and you know the administrative costs related to implementing computer systems and software for transferring massive books of business. So online verification is the optimal approach to solving the problem of identifying uninsured motorists. Regarding commercials, if I may, I'd like to give some input based on discussions that we have had with the insurance industry. Statistics show that between 0.5% and 1.5% of commercial vehicles are uninsured. And that's in contrast to the 14% of personal passenger vehicles. So that's the reason why the industry has not focused on commercial vehicles. The IICMPA actually has considered commercial vehicles in the design of their web services system and will have a solution for commercial vehicles in the future. And that's part of the plan. And they have already put the Federal Employer Identification Number into the record for the web services approach. So they are talking about that. Discussions have begun, and there will be a solution one day for that as well. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. And if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Do we have any questions for Mr. Oh, we do have some questions for you. Senator Cowdery?
Yes. You said can an insurance company legally give this kind of information out to an inquiry? For instance, are they, is this information public information from the insurance company, or can they withhold that, or do you know?
Through the chair, Senator, the insurance companies are providing the data directly to the state. And they have an obligation to do so. And the state, obviously, has a right to that data. The data is not public, cannot be disclosed outside of the authorized users in the state. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, and I want to follow up. How do you address a situation as somebody talked about earlier of canceling a policy, you know, the day after they get their license? How does that address?
There are two ways to do that. One is the system can automatically check for insurance on some specified basis so that if you have a registration event, you can check again 30 days later and 30 days after that or however often as you like. The other is the insurance companies, as part of some of the systems that we've implemented, are transferring cancellations on a daily basis to our system. And so whenever we get a cancellation, we'll do an instant check of all the other insurance companies to see whether or not the policy has just been transferred to another company. If it is not, then action can be taken.
And one last question. What is the cost of your software to a person?
Our client is the state. The state puts our software on the state's computers and pays us a monthly fee that's all-inclusive, and that fee ranges between 1 and 3 cents per vehicle per month, depending upon the features that are used by the state.
Thank you.
Yes. Senator Wilkin has a question for you. Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple, actually. Thank you, sir, for being with us today. A couple of things. I looked in your brochure, and from what I can read here, there's two states that are full up on this not in a test mode, but have implementation. Actually, one, that would be Oklahoma. And Texas is starting, just passed a law, and they'll be full up sometime this year. Are there any other states in the union that have this in place and have battle tested it with your software?
First, in terms of the states that we're working with, Florida was the first to actually implement the software, and there we have some insurance companies actually in production in Florida, passing live data to the state of Florida. Wyoming is in a pilot test right now, okay? Texas, we have a contract with Texas, and we will begin implementation there in April.
So
Oklahoma has passed the law, but has not yet implemented the system.
So it would be safe to say that there are no states, at least with your software, there are no states in the union that have had this full up and operational for any period of time, that being a year?
Florida is not a year yet.
Yes, okay. So this is leading
new
edge.
Technology. In fact, the specifications for this were released by the ISCMBA just over a year ago.
Okay, thank you for that.
So this is new technology. It will evolve further from where it is today. We expect that we will take into account all of the states, and the ISCMBA is trying to come up with a solution that will work for every state so that every state can use a standard system.
Okay, thank you for that. My other question, could you walk me through a routine stop? What happens? I ran a red light at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I'm pulled over. Tell me what happens, how this works.
Well, if the officer actually runs your license plate in his vehicle prior to leaving his vehicle, so that he can get back wants and warrants and he can check to see whether or not, the vehicle's stolen, okay? As part of that, when the request goes to the motor vehicle database from law enforcement, which is handled internally in your system, the DMV system sends a request through our software to the insurance companies to verify insurance and then sends that response back to the officer along with the other information that he's already getting.
So is it driven by, it's driven by a license plate number that is matched up somewhere in a database
With
a VIN number and then with a active insurance policy.
Correct. Also passed our vehicle make and model and year. Optional fields include the driver's license, the license driver's name, and address information. So there are additional fields that can be passed to assure an accurate match.
And so communication would come from the law enforcement automobile through radio back to central dispatch, which would then contact this database through internet?
Well, no, the dispatch would perform the normal check that they do now of the DMV database.
Uh-huh.
In doing that, the software that DMV has would automatically send the request to the Verisol software, which would send it to the insurance company, get the response back, and send it back so that when DMV replied to the dispatcher's inquiry, that insurance information would be part of the response.
Okay. So a active and reliable internet connection at all times would be necessary for this system to work properly?
Yes.
Okay.
And there, based on our experience in payment processing, as a group, what we did prior to this was we did payment processing software, which is the software that the merchants use to process your credit card when you go in to buy something or when you use it on the internet. And we have the same kind of infrastructure and security that's used in processing those transactions.
Okay. We
expect it to be up 99.98% of the time.
Yeah, we just struggle in this state in places that don't have internet on a reliable basis. So we may be holding people up for no reason other than technology. But my last question is, who else in America offers this software? Who's your competitors?
So far, not.
Okay, thank you for your testimony today.
Any other questions for Mr. Pecchio? Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. Has your system ever been hacked into, or have you ever lost consumer data?
No, and we don't maintain any data. Our system is merely infrastructure for communicating back and forth with insurance companies. All of the data that is passed is encrypted, and the only two parties that can see the data are the insurance company and the state. Also, in our payment processing software, no one ever hacked our payment processing software.
Any other questions for Mr. Pecchio? Senator Hollis French.
Thank you for the indulgence, Mr. Chairman. I have to go to a budget subcommittee. I'm going to leave my staffer, Ms. Biostock. But I just wanted to address the concern that Senator Wilkin had about verification, and it was our concern as well. Obviously, there are going to be times when the internet's just not going to be available for whatever reason, and we don't want our citizens harassed unnecessarily. And that's why the bill, in a couple of places, at the bottom of page 2 and at the top of page 3, describes how the form of proof of insurance is sufficient evidence in a form prescribed by the department of the existence of a policy of insurance that complies with the underlying statute. It could be your insurance card. It could be a policy you keep in your glove box. It could be some other form. The event-based internet system is going to be, I think, the main form, but it wouldn't force a police officer to impound your car if the internet was down, or even if you got an erroneous response, if he got a bad data back and he saw that you had a card, or if he just knew you or had some other reason to believe that you had an insurance policy. We've left that sort of open for the department to outline, and we've also left the discretion of the officer so that we don't harass our citizens unnecessarily. It's permissive enough, I think, we had earlier testimony in a different committee from the police departments about how they'd use their judgment to not impound vehicles when they don't have to, and still allow for the older forms of verification that many folks are more comfortable with, the card and the glove box, to continue to be used.
Thank you.
With all due respect, I come from a part of the country where we've had a police officer that maybe wasn't the most trustworthy, and so because of that, we're awfully suspicious of some of these questionable or erroneous the information that may be transferred. So I guess I just want to be cautious on and make sure that harassment is not one of the things that does happen.
I share that concern. Thank you, Senator Olson, through the chair.
Senator Olson.
One last question. I guess as we look at this bill, I'm not sure what the focus of the intent of the bill is. I'm assuming that it's some way that we can go ahead and make it so that the premiums for people that subscribe to the insurance policy will either get a decrease in the premiums, or are we just going to see the increase on the stock market for the insurance companies?
Senator Olson, through the chair, we have spoken to Linda Hall, the director of insurance, and they run the numbers. The first objective is to reduce the number of uninsured drivers on the road, and the financial consequences that impose, those incidents impose. I think one of the byproducts should be a reduction in your insurance premium if the market forces work appropriately, and that's Ms. Hall's domain.
Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with all due respect, I would just caution about moving this bill too quickly. I think Senator French would agree, and I'd ask if it's all right just to hold this for a week, because this is a great big policy call. This is not light legislation, and this could affect a lot of people. And I think the intent is good if you can get to where you're going. I have great concern that it'll work, and why would we be part of an experiment when 5 years from now we could have battle-tested system? But having said that, Mr. Chair, I don't think there would be a problem with some more people ringing in on this and thinking a little bit about it. Nothing's going to happen in finance with it anyhow, given what's coming that way for a while. So I would think that I'd just caution you, and maybe just with all due respect, a little advice, just let this sit for a week and let people ring in. This is a big deal.
Actually, for the information of the committee, I did let it sit for a week. Senator French had brought it to me, and we had scheduled it, and then we pulled it for a week so that we could work on problems that we thought were out there, and we have sat on it for a week. Senator French, any comment?
I neither pushed my bills nor pulled them, Mr. Chairman. I'm absolutely at the will of the committee. And due now in another subcommittee. I'll leave those delicate questions to my staffer.
And, yes. I've got a committee, too, and I'm not leaving because I'm in.
Okay, thanks.
So
we do still have people online who want to testify.
With all due respect to the last senator's comment about the Finance Committee, I want to make sure that you're sure that the Finance Committee is in good order and can hear the bill if
we need. Thank you. I want to go back and finish public testimony, if we could. Tom McGrath, who's online.
Hello, this is Tom McGrath.
Yeah, would you state your name and affiliation for the record, please?
My name is Tom McGrath, and I am not really affiliated with any group. I know Senator French from the Spinard Community Council. Mr. Chairman and Senators, I thank you for this opportunity. In the past, I've worked last year, Tom Anderson, Representative Tom Anderson, had a bill in the House that tried to deal with this subject. And then Assemblyman Paul Baer in Anchorage recently had an ordinance passed in Anchorage, primarily doing the same thing without the Barisol component. I ask you to support Senator French's Senate Bill 68. Driving is a privilege, not a right. I think the law is well-crafted because insurance is only checked upon another event rather than a proactive system of track insurance for every vehicle in Alaska in some other way. And it is an insurance industry-supported system, which I believe is important and an important component. It's my belief that people who do not have insurance also, or don't have insurance because probably of SR-22s due to DUIs, lack of funds, which means they cannot perform or show financial responsibility in the event of an accident. The vehicle is not properly registered in some cases, and the operator is not properly licensed. And that's from anecdotal evidence from police officers that I've talked to. Anchorage passed a confiscation bill last year, but there's no easy way to check without the Barisol type software. I have a business in Anchorage. 75% of the accidents that my vehicles have been involved in recent years have been with uninsured motorists, which are not only a huge expense for the business because I had to cover the expense, but also for the time involved in trying to ascertain whether they had insurance, didn't have insurance, and everything that is associated with that. In closing, I think it's when driving in Alaska, all persons driving are driving with insurance. It should be mandatory under the law, and I would encourage you to go forward with this legislation to make the cost causer the cost payer rather than people that just get hit at accidents having to pick up the tab. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of the committee for Mr. McGrath? If not, we'll go to Kenton Bryan online.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Kenton Bryan, and I am the regional manager for the Northwest region for the Property Casualty Insurers Association of America. We're a trade association representing about 1,000 member companies across the country. Our members make up about 40% of the auto insurance market share across the country. I wanted to express my personal thanks and the thanks of our members for the work that we've been able to do with Senator French and Allison Biostock and the Alaska legislature in trying to improve this legislation. We were opposed to the original draft of the bill, as I think you heard Senator French allude to earlier, and we believe the bill is heading more in the right direction. I did want to make a couple of specific comments. I don't have the benefit of having seen the committee substitute, so I can tell you that we've been working in good faith with Senator French and Allison to offer some constructive, what we believe are constructive amendments. I believe, from what I've been told, that some of those things are in, but we asked for some things as late as this morning, so I'm sure they haven't had time to incorporate everything that we were trying to add in. In general, there are just a few areas that we wanted to see addressed in the bill. We wanted to see a firm effective date set out to, for example, January of 2009, there would be a time, a firm timetable for moving the process along. We wanted to narrow what could actually be instituted by the DMV to this web-based system so that if they got some distance down the road and there was investment in it, that they couldn't shift gears and move to a different project. We've had a conference call with the department and with the IIMPVA, which is has insurers on it, as well as the administrators. And we feel like we're all trying to move in the same direction, and this isn't about whether or not we trust the DMV to do what it says it's going to do. This is more about trying to set in statute some parameters about what the program would look like, and so that there wouldn't be any confusion about it as the program was developed. We also wanted to make sure that it was specified in the statutory language who would have access, and I don't necessarily mean specifically who, person by person, but that we would specify that only authorized persons would have access to the database, and that we wanted to specify that a private right of action would not be created as a result of errors that come as a part of the verification system, because there are, as you've already heard, we don't have one of these up and running anywhere live yet, and we don't know that they'll be perfect systems, and errors are likely to occur. And then finally, we're also interested in what forms of identifiers could be used. You've heard mentioned that a VIN number, for example, might be an identifying characteristic for use in the verification process. I have a number of companies that don't use VIN numbers to identify their insurance policy, so we need to make some flexibility in this program to accept other identifiers, such as a policy number, a policyholder's name, or whatever, or VIN number, or whichever is used. And I'm sure those details could likely be worked out in the regulation that came after the legislation was approved. And then I want to make one pitch again. I've not had the opportunity to speak to this committee, but I did raise this in the previous committee that the bill was in. One of the things I think that we're trying to get to here is to reduce the number of uninsured drivers on the road. I need to caution you, I think, that the perfect system for getting uninsured motorists off the road has yet to be invented. And I'm sure that the people at Verisol believe they've created a product that's going to finally going to get us there. I don't know whether that's true or not, because it's really so far untested. But I can tell you this, that every state that has ever enacted any kind of crackdown on uninsured motorists, be it impounding vehicles, be it, you know, checking for proof of insurance at time of registration, all the hosts of things that have been tried around the country, they all work for just about maybe less than a year. And then the numbers of uninsured motorists climb right back up to where they traditionally are. It would be an unfortunate exercise for me to spend time trying to speculate why that is. But the bottom line is, no system has yet been created to permanently reduce on an ongoing basis in a significant way the number of uninsured drivers that you have on your roadways. And one of the best ways, however, to impact it is to make insurance as affordable as possible for people and make the access to it as easy to get as possible. In that spirit, I would like to suggest and ask, as I have asked previously of other committees and legislators, that you consider asking the Department of Motor Vehicles to come forward with a plan to do kind of the reverse of what this legislation does, and that is create a web-based access point for insurers to get access to motor vehicle records of drivers. As you know, one of the...
Excuse me, sir. That isn't really in front of us right now. We're talking specifically about this particular bill. Could you limit your testimony to this particular bill, please? I understand there's a perfect world out there. We're all looking for it, but I don't think today's the day we're going to find it.
Well, it was my intent to see if we could get this offered as an amendment to the bill, actually, and we have suggested that to Senator French's office as well and to the department.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Mr. Bryan? Senator Wilikowski?
You're asking for an effective date of 2009?
January 1st, yes, please.
Could I ask the sponsor, it doesn't appear to be an effective date in your CS. Do you have any objection that January 2009 is an effective date?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I apologize, the effective date is not in the bill. As written, of course, it would be as statute after the signature, the number of days. We had talked about splitting the difference and perhaps trying to do sometime maybe in June or July of 2008. I understand the DMV would be ready to go with the effective date as written. it's a policy call. I could.
I guess. Well, as it's written, it's got an effective date of 90 days from the day it's signed, correct?
Correct.
In which case, I don't think we can get this up in 90 days, can we? Maybe Mr. Bannick is on the line still. I don't know. Mr. Bannick, are you there? Yes, ma'am.
You have a answer to his question, maybe?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, from previous conversations I've had with the Department of Owner Vehicles, it was my understanding they would be able to get this bill up and running with the effective date as is.
Any other questions, Senator Olson?
So if I'm hearing you correctly, the major difficulty would get the technology in place to have it up and running. Is that what the problem is?
Correct. Senator Olson, through the chair, it should be using the existing computer system that the state has. It's a matter of just getting the
software.
Correct.
I don't see any advantage of waiting till 2009 to go ahead and have this put in place myself, unless there's something I'm missing.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Bryan? If not, we're going to get offline and ask if there's anybody in the audience that would like to testify. If not, what is the wish of the committee? Senator Cowdery.
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion to move committee substitute Senate Bill 68 as amended on to the next committee, a referral with the accompanying fiscal note, and as for individual recommendations, ask for unanimous consent.
Is there an objection? See, no objection, and we will move it. I do want to make a final comment. I wonder if the sponsor could look at the amendment that we carried earlier to see if it affects the title in the next committee of referral.
Certainly.
I think we ought to at least look at that. I don't know if it does or not. But with that, we don't have anything else before this committee, and I'll move. We are adjourned. Could you sign?